Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and I'm your host through our 12 Days of Doctrine. Today, on the fourth day of Doctrine, Special Doctrine Division is giving to you, our listeners, a fire-breathing dragon. Have you ever looked at the Chemical Corps regimental insignia or coat of arms? On both, you'll find a dragon, symbolizing the fire and destruction of chemical warfare. In today's episode, we talk less about the dragon's fire and destruction and more about the integration of seaburn operations. That's chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear operations, with a joint force, on the battlefield, and for our homeland defense. Unless you're a Chemical Corps professional, I think you'll learn a lot about this branch and also understand the commander and staff options in a seaburn environment.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. So I'm Lieutenant Colonel Derek Taylor. I work in Seaburn Doctrine as the chief at the Maneuver Support Center of Excellence. We're co-located with the military police and engineers. Collectively, we support the Maneuver Support Commander's initiatives, his priorities. We also cover down on protection doctrine.
Maybe this is a silly question, but do you actually work in the Sabering School, or do you fall under another organization under the Maneuver Support Center of Excellence?
Yes, so the U.S. Army Seaburn School is also at Fort Leonard Wood. Our doctrine department, it doesn't work directly for the Seaburn School, but okay. We are partnered with them.
Interesting. Okay. So what are you guys thinking about working on right now?
So currently, we've been adapting our doctrine to the 2022 update of FM3O, making sure that we nest with the multi-domain operations concept and are focused on large-scale combat operations, specifically with the release of ADP 337 protection. We also make sure that we are nested under the protection priorities and can support commanders with that warfighting function.
What in FM3O drove change for you guys?
Well, first off, there was a major initiative across all the doctrine centers. Because FM3O is one of the foundational publications, that all the other FMs must be updated to NEST. We identified a few things. One, there had been some organizational structure changes within the Seaburn units, so that needed to reflect the updated capabilities, the names. We modified a few definitions, and so the definition of Seaburn operations change to better reflect our current capabilities, as well as to essentially simplify the concept so that it's easy to understand and implement.
Who do you collaborate with? What other communities do you work with? You know, we've had USANCA on the podcast before, so we've talked nuke specific stuff. Do you work with them, or do you work with different agencies across the chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear spectrum?
We do. Interestingly, Seaburn defense is one of the nation's top priorities. As such, there are joint-level organizations that help govern all things Seaburn for all the services. And the reason that they have some of that oversight is to make sure that the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, the Army, that our capabilities and how we operate on the battlefield are synchronized. We use similar detectors, similar protective equipment, and the TTPs for conducting decontamination are very similar. So it should not matter if you're working with one of the other sister services, that you can easily swap filters. They can supply you. You can go through one of their decontamination lines, and it should somewhat mirror what we're doing. And so many of our publications are multi-service publications. We partner with those other services to make sure that our TTPs are similar. Where there are differences, we make sure to annotate that within Doctrine so that the reader understands, okay, if I am with the Marines, they might use some different terminology. They may have a different concept for changing out their protective gear. But ultimately, you know, we are sharing that information so it is not a surprise when you're on the battlefield.
So you say battlefield too, but you also talked about Homeland Defense.
Yes.
So where do you spend more of your time?
The majority of our time is focused on supporting the maneuver doctrine for large-scale combat.
Okay. Which makes sense with Rio.
Correct. We do work with the Homeland Defense Office, and we do have a few publications that cover domestic seaburn response. A majority of the chemical units reside in the Compo 2 and 3, and many of them, and occasionally some active duty units, are aligned to Homeland Defense missions. And they are trained specifically for contingency response should an incident occur in the homeland. As such, we do have doctrine that covers those responses. We are currently revising one of those publications. We just started that for the Weapons of Mass Destruction Civil Support Teams. That's a National Guard element, and they are kind of the tip of the spear for this seaburn response enterprise should an incident occur in the United States.
So I may have gone on a tangent there. Any other units or entities with which or with whom you collaborate?
Within the Army, we also participate in a modernization working group to cover seaburn.mlpf domains. And so we provide regular updates as doctrine has changed. We also receive updates as there's new capabilities, org structures, policies that come out that we may need to be aware of in order to update our doctrine. So we try and stay connected through those realms.
Okay, gotcha. Any other major changes that are coming down the pipeline that listeners should know about?
So as I mentioned, the 2022 publication of 3.0 triggered a revision of subordinate field manuals. Our new FM 311, which should be published very soon now, but our new FM 311 Seaburn Operations continues the evolution of Seaburn Operations in a multi-domain operations construct. It lays the foundation for other Army multi-service 311 series publications. As I mentioned, we modified the definition of Seaburn Operations to better reflect our current capabilities and operating concept. Additionally, it expounds upon interactions with each warfighting function, contributions to the Protection Working Group at the division and corps levels, and actions within the Seaburn Control Center. It also provides additional clarity and examples regarding Seaburn report flow, as well as Seaburn support requests. We also have a planning publication, which is also in the final publication stages. It includes details and graphics to help Seaburn staff at Echelon conduct analysis of Seaburn threats and hazards, as well as develop a Seaburn defense plan. It also includes an easy-to-reference table of staff duties and responsibilities at Echelon, so those junior officers or any officer new to a Echelon staff has a quick reference to kind of gauge what they should be doing, what products they owe their subordinates, and what they can expect from their higher headquarters.
That reminded me, a question that I like to ask a lot on this podcast is about commanders and staffs. You know, so what should the staff Seaburn officer be advocating for and making sure that they have a seat at the table? But then also, what should commanders be asking their staff officers?
That's a great question. First and foremost, you know, our Seaburn staff officers work for the commander. We advise the commander on all things chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear. We are a resource, but the main thing that I would advocate and that we tried to emphasize in the new FM 311 for Seaburn operations is that all units may conduct Seaburn operations, and as such, they need to be familiar with the Seaburn core functions of assess, protect, and mitigate. Additionally, all units maintain some capability to perform these Seaburn core functions. What Seaburn units provide is additional capacity and capability to perform those assess, protect, and mitigate functions. Recently, early 2024, we published two manuals, one for seaborne protection and one for contamination mitigation. What's important to know is we specifically emphasized contamination mitigation as opposed to decontamination because we wanted to emphasize the commanders have options, that you don't necessarily have to perform decontamination after every incident. And that manual covers some of those options. And what we'd like the staff to better understand and recommend to their commanders is how to articulate the risks associated with performing decontamination based on the time requirements and the resource requirements versus pushing through the contamination and continuing the fight to maintain the initiative and then addressing the contamination at a more opportune time. So additionally, there are some updated reports and research that is helping us shape our understanding of how contamination will impact the battlefield. That will help us refine how we recommend and who we recommend goes through decontamination versus just removing themselves from the situation outside of the exposure, because not all detected contamination means that there is a physical persistent agent on an individual. So those are all things that we've addressed within the publications and that we've gone in more detail in the ATP 311.36 for seaborne planning.
Gotcha, that's interesting. Has this doctrine driven change in how there's training at Fort Leonard Wood?
It will influence some of the training. While these items have been addressed through training before, we are now just providing a better reference for the training material.
Oh, okay.
So we've talked about developing seaborne defense plans for years. We've talked about mitigation options, but we've not had a clear process or guideline that goes as in-depth as this new planning publication has. So one thing that we're trying to emphasize, and if you look at many of the operating environments and some of our near-peer competitors, WMDs remain a top concern for our senior leaders. We have seen over recent years limited use of some chemical weapons. We've seen use of riot control agents, which during wartime is against the Geneva Convention and falls similarly into that category of banned chemicals for use on the battlefield. As an army and as a world, we've gone through a pandemic, which, while may not have been intentional, does impact operations. And part of our job is to advise units on how to enable freedom of action despite these challenges that they may face on the battlefield. And looking throughout history, endemic, biological diseases have been a challenge. And how do we continue operations and have safe practices? Some of that falls in the medical lane, and some of that falls in the seaborne lane in terms of some of the protective gear that we have, the masks, and just general considerations. Not every unit has a medical staff officer. I'm thinking down at the company level, but they do have a seaborne or someone who's trained on the basics of those seaborne core functions to help advise in those situations.
Yeah, you kind of reminded me of the nuke episode that we did with General Garrickey, because he was emphasizing, like, when a nuke goes off, we can't just, like, stop. We have to fight through it. And it sounds like that's what you guys are emphasizing also.
Correct. And in addition to that, and one thing that we're working with USANCA, and they're currently revising their ATP 372 for nuclear operations in the nuclear environment, is that The United States does possess nuclear weapons. While unlikely and while we hope we never have to use them, if that decision is made, we need to understand how to enable that use and not lose the opportunities that we gain should we decide to use that capability. So it's not just reacting to enemy use of nuclear weapons. It's, are we prepared to fight through a contaminated area, or at least understand how the nuclear detonation and the residual fallout will impact the battlefield as we continue operations.
Anything else that you wanted to get out there?
Every echelon has a Seaburn staff. They are very, very talented. They go through a lot of great training. They are technical experts in their craft. And I would encourage all leaders to incorporate some level of Seaburn training at echelon. Mm-hmm. There are ways to do it that don't interfere with other training objectives. And your Seaburn staff can advise on how best to do that. We do see quite often, however, that units show up to some culminating training event and may face a Seaburn training scenario for the first time. We are here to help through that situation, but life is easier if you train prior to. Mm-hmm. So as we work through the challenges that we see in the future, there may be situations where even though WMDs are not used, our actions on the battlefield may cause hazards, you know, as we push through cities, you know, urban areas, certain industrial sites, there are hazards, and your Seaburn staff is there to advise on what impacts may happen if those structures are damaged, if there is a release of chemicals.
Yeah.
Additionally, there are subterranean structures where just because of how it is built, whether it's in an urban area or a military-purposed facility, there may not be great air circulation. There may be hazards because of things that we've done. Soldiers need to be prepared to enter those environments, and the Seaburn staff can advise on those.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the Kurin Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Please don't forget to subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Also, go ahead and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.